No matter whom I talk to these days, when the subject of Christmas comes up, that person wants to tell me a story of a Christmas from their past. It may be the story of a Christmas from their childhood when they were quite small. It may be the story of a Christmas when they themselves were the parent of small children. It may be the story from Christmas of the last cherished Christmas that they shared with a loved one now gone. Or it may be a Christmas story from a time when the person telling the story was under duress, was going through a time of hardship, a time when the person telling the story didn't have much they thought worth celebrating. These last kinds of stories, the stories of Christmases celebrated during hard times, all have a similar theme, that the news of the birth of Jesus can come as even a greater gift to those under duress, to those in need. And so this is one such story. And I'm a character in the story. I'm not the only character, but I am a character in this story. It was 8 a.m. as the woman inside the food stamp office, that's a government food program for low-income people in the United States. It was 8 a.m. when the woman inside that office unlocked the door from the inside and let the 20 or so people in who had been gathering at the door for the previous 15 minutes. One of that group was me. Me at age 28, with long dark hair, if you can imagine, and a 3-year-old in tow. All of us were there that morning early because in those days, people applying or reapplying for food stamps were not allowed to make an appointment with the social worker, but instead were served on a first-come, first-served basis. And so I, like many others, had lined up early, or what we thought was early, so that I could get the lowest possible number and the earliest possible time in the wait to see the person who would complete our application and would calculate whether or not we qualified for the certificates that could be used to purchase food in local participating grocery stores. That's how that program was administered in those days. It was, of course, this is a Christmas story, it was, of course, December, and the little office was filled with reminders of Christmas, the ways that many offices were filled with that in those days. Plastic greenery with red bows hanging from the receptionist's desk and cutouts of the rosy-cheeked Santas pinned on the walls. A little crooked Christmas tree decorated with construction paper snowflakes and lights even stood on a small table in the corner. But for all of its festive decorations, the office was a depressing place to be, to tell you the truth, for it was filled with people who had come together to apply for food. Old people with deep lines in their faces and expressions that said, "We have done this many times before." Afflicted people with portable tanks of oxygen or canes or walkers. Unemployed people who looked either restless or listless. And of course, there was me, there I was, a married, college-educated woman with a 3-year-old who believed herself to be temporarily poor, briefly passing through this place on account of temporary, unfortunate circumstances. Things moved slowly in that office. The receptionist called a number, and a man or woman got up and was shown to a back office. And then, no lie, 40 minutes later, this same person emerged. Then another number was called. As a woman with an active, curious child, my objective was simply to survive the experience. And so I'd brought toys, books, Cheerios, and lunch to amuse, cajole, and distract my daughter. We worked through all these things one at a time and then worked through them again. But she was restless, and I, of course, was uncomfortable just being in a place where the alternative to being down on your luck was having no luck at all. It was about this time, after toys and books and Cheerios and lunch, not once but twice, that the outside door to the office opened and someone new walked in. She was a young African-American woman in a jacket with the hood up, so it was hard to see her face. Right behind her came another woman, older, holding something down low. It was a baby carrier, and in it was something or someone so bundled and blanketed that he or she was completely out of sight. The two began unzipping their coats to sit down. From the similarity of their features, they had to have been mother and daughter, both with high cheekbones and strong, proud faces. Neither made eye contact with the others in the waiting room, but turned their attention to the slow process of unpeeling whatever or whoever was in the baby carrier. In response to this, the little waiting room started to wake up and come alive. A bored young man sitting next to the two women moved his belongings to make more room for the baby carrier and the diaper bag. A middle-aged woman with a portable oxygen tank who had sat holding her number with her eyes closed for the last 2 hours opened her eyes and watched as the baby was being unblanketed. An older man with a cane began to make his way to the water fountain at our end of the room, clearly just wanting to get a look. And my restless toddler stopped what she was doing and watched in silence for the baby that she hoped would be revealed. And revealed he was. Out of one, then two, then three layers of blankets, out of the tiny coat he was dressed up in, and out of a little blue hooded all-in-one, out he came, a tiny newborn with skin the color of dark coffee and a full head of hair, a perfect little boy. It was at that moment that the receptionist, the dispenser of numbers, the gatekeeper through whom all had to go to get to the social worker, the receptionist got up out of her chair, walked over to the two women, and leaned toward the baby. "Why, look at this," she said. "Look at this pretty little boy. It looks like the baby Jesus has come early this year." This was all that my three-year-old daughter needed. "Is that baby Jesus?" she asked in a loud voice. The room laughed out loud. Or was it that some of them shouted for joy? For me, the question hung in the air. "Is that baby Jesus?" "Yes," I said to myself and in a whisper to her, "yes." You could say that the story of Jesus being born to Mary and to Joseph, a family that was under duress, a family that had very little, is all about God's favor and goodness coming to and resting on the oppressed and the needy. You could say that that's what Luke's story is all about. You could say that the people who deeply understand the significance and gift of God taking on our flesh are those who have little more than the flesh that they themselves are carrying around with them. You could say both of these things and you would be right. But tonight I would also say this, that the story of Jesus being born to all of us, is the story of God's relentless love. God's relentless love for a world that easily loses track, that the sacred, the holy, burns brightly right at the heart of things and therefore is present in all of our lives. And that relentless love comes to us all, not just once a year, but over and over, as fresh and new as a newborn child, bringing all of us hope and possibility in the way that only a child can bring it. And that same relentless love asks something of us to enact this hope, this possibility, for the sake of a world that at times can seem dark and out of gas and hopeless. Is that baby Jesus, my daughter asked, like many children, ready to behold the sacred, the holy, right in front of them, in a place and at a time that adults would never have expected it? Tonight, that baby, that holy child, lives right in front of you, lives deep within you, ready to be the hope and the possibility that you yearn for and that the world needs.